34. They had been running hot and hard now for many hours, and it was starting to show in his crew. Redwing sat on the bridge because if he paced for hours, as he already had, everybody got edgy. Fair enough. He sat and twitched, mostly by moving his feet in their gecko shoes, where nobody could see. He had used up his weekly shower ration in 2 days of this. They had entered the jet days ago, not that there was any clear sign of it. The mag field values started to climb a day ago, and the plasma density followed it. Only by amping certain spectral lines of yellow and green could the wall screen show the filmy curtains of sliding ion flow in the jet. Those weren't plasma, really. The light came off from ions as electrons found them at last and cascaded down the energy levels to emit a photon. The light showed where plasma eased into little deaths. Now Ion Ali had taken over as lead pilot, and Claire Conway sat in the co-pilot deck chair. Beth Marple had gone to get some sleep. They all watched the blue and green lines work on the large screen, mapping pressures and flux changes at the perimeter of their mag scoop fields. "How's the scoop impedance looking?" Redwing asked.
"Down to 3 megohms, sir."
From her sideways glance, he knew Ion Ali understood that he could have read it from the screens, but that they needed to have some talk on the bridge just to diffuse tensions. A rumble and a rolling shock came rippling through the ship.
"Ride's interesting," Redwing said mildly.
Ion Ali smiled and nodded, eyes never leaving the screens, hands on the E-helm at all times.
"We took a shock front from 42 degrees starboard, 17 degrees south. Plasma still rising."
"This fits the model car I worked up?"
Sort of."
A skeptical arching of eyebrows. Redwing picked up something more in her body language. Carl and Ion Ali always kept a wary distance in crew meetings and were crisply correct around him, which led him to wonder if something was going on between them. They were in a dangerous place and tensions needed release. He decided to put it away for later, if ever. The mission was the point here.
"Okay, nobody expects models to work well here. I don't, anyway. Let's see the aft scoop and plume."
Redwing always felt a bit jumpy about anything sneaking up behind them, though with the Artilex on constant duty, that was extremely unlikely. The rumbling aft faded. Eerie popping noises came through the support beams and hollow creaking sounded. A sour stench of something scorched, probably just overheating in a forward tank. The display space before them showed flurries of plasma, highlighted in violet, slamming into the scoop.
"Those knots again," Ion Ali said.
"Let's see the long-range radar," Redwing said.
They studied the yawning space around the jet, looking from multiple dishes.
"Nothing near us, nothing in near space, nothing farther out,"
Ion Ali said.
"I've always wondered why we saw so few spacecraft. You'd think they would be sending ships out to monitor the whole system."
Redwing nodded.
"This system has no planets or asteroids, no comets coming in. Nothing bigger than a school bus. But there were some small craft, remember? They came over the bowl rim, flew along the top of their atmosphere manifolds, ducked into a hole in the upper atmosphere layer."
"But very few, very little craft,"
Claire shrugged.
"And we know the gravitational instabilities that the bowl risks all the time. If they get too close to the star, they have to fire up the jet and push the stellar mass away, while they grab the rising jet flux and let it push them back. Reverse if they start falling behind. Then there's the spinning bowl, same instabilities as a spinning top. But I guess they can run this whole wacky system without many spacecraft."
Carl came onto the bridge, back from checking inductance coils along the ship. He had heard Ion Ali.
"It's all maintained with magnetic fields and jet pressure," he said, "plus the reflected sunlight to heat the hotspot. Tricky stuff."
"Those inductance coils getting worked hard?" Redwing asked.
"Running high, but within margin."
Carl got into his chair and belted up, casting a side look at Redwing as if to say, "Why don't you sit?" Redwing never explained that he liked to move through the ship when it was having trouble. He could tell more with his feet and ears than the screens could say. They had taken 3 days to cross the jet with the fusion chambers running at full bore, driving them to nearly 200 kilometers per second. That was far higher than an orbital velocity, though still far under the ship's coasting specs. Sunseeker now is turning in the helix Carl had calculated, cutting in an arc near the jet's boundary, its mag scoop facing the star at a steep angle
and swallowing its heated plasma. They had faced such a headwind coming in and survived. But now the navigation was tougher. This time they had to remain lower than the bowl's rim, or else come within the firing field of the gamma-ray lasers there.
"How do we know this is the optimal path?"
Red Wing asked Carl.
"Calculations, I mean from what we've learned these last few days."
"It's working."
Carl's lean face tightened, ending in his skewed, tight mouth above a pointed chin where he had begun to grow a goatee.
"We're brushing the mag pressures outward. Our sideways thrust drives the magnetic kink mode, feeding off the jet's own forward momentum. We're stimulating the flow patterns at the right wavelength to make the jet slew."
"We'll see sideways jet movement before it shoots through the knothole?"
"It should."
Carl's gaze was steady, intent. He had a lot riding on this.
"Let's look aft. Have we got better directionals this time?"
Red Wing asked Ayan Ali.
"Somewhat," she said. "I rotated some aft antennas to get a look, the sideband controllers too."
She changed the color view, and Red Wing watched brilliant yellow knots twist around the prow of their mag scoop like neon tropical storms.
"These curlers push us sideways a lot."
A rumble ran down the axis, and Red Wing hung on to Ayan Ali's deck chair. Claire showed the acoustic monitor's display in red lines on a side screen. The strains worked all down the ship axis.
"We're getting side shear,"
Red Wing said mildly. He took care not to give direct piloting instructions. No backseat driving.
"I'll fire a small side jet, let some plasma vent from the side of the mag scoop, rotate on the other axis, and take our aft around some."
Her hands traced a command in the space before her. A faint rumbling began, then a surge. The ship slid sideways and Red Wing hung onto a deck chair. Multiple axis accelerations had never been his strong point. His stomach lurched. She worked on getting the aft view aligned.
Sunseeker's core was no mere pod sitting atop the big fuel tank that held the fusion catalyst ions. Gouts of those ions had to merge with the incoming plasma, fresh from the mag scoop. In turn, the mated streams fed into the reactor. Of course, the parts had to line up that way along the axis, no matter how ornate the subsections got, hanging on the main axis, because the water reserves tank shielded the biozone and crew up front, far from the fusion reactor, and the plasma plume in the magnetic nozzle. Red Wing knew every rivet and corner of the ship, and liked to prowl through all its sections. The whole stack was in zero-G, except the thick rotating toroid at the top, which the crew seldom left. 116 meters in diameter, looking like a dirty, scarred angel food cake, it spun lazily around to provide a full Earth G at the outside. There, the walls were 2 meters thick and filled with water for radiation shielding. So were the bow walls, shaped into a Chinese hat with its point forward, bristling with viewing sensors. From the inside, nobody could eyeball the outside except through electronic feeds. Yet they had big wall displays at high resolution and smart optics to tell them far more than a window ever could. Ayan Ali's work brought the multiple camera views into alignment with some jitter. They were looking back at the bowl, and she had to tease the jet out of all the brighter oceans and lands slowly turning in the background. A complicated problem. "Let's get a clear look down of the jet,"
Red Wing said. To see and diagnose the plume, they had a rear-view polished aluminum mirror floating out 40 meters to the side. They didn't dare risk a survey bot in the rolling plasma streams that skirted around the mag scoop, with occasional dense plasma fingers jutting in. The image tuned through different spectral lines, picking out regions where densities were high and glows twisted. On the screen, a blue-white flare tapered away for 1,000 kilometers before fraying into streamers. Plasma fumed and blared along the exhaust length, ions and electrons finding each other at last and reuniting into atoms, spitting out an actinic glare. The blue pencil pointed dead astern. He was used to seeing it against the black of space, but now all around their jet was a view of the bowl. The gray-white mirror zones glinted with occasional sparkles from the innumerable mirrors that reflected light back on the star. Seen slightly to the side of the jet, the knothole was a patch of dark beneath the filmy yellow and orange filigrees of the jet. Red Wing supposed that at the right angle, the whole jet looked like a filmy exclamation point, with Vikram Singh Star as the searing bright dot. Carl said, "See that bulge to the left? That's the kink working toward the knothole."
Ayan Ali nodded. Wow, to think we can kick this thing around.
Trick is, we're using the jet's energy to do the work. Carl smiled a thin, pale line. It's snaking like a fire hose held in by magnetic fields. Ayan Ali frowned.
When it hits the knot hole, how close to the edge does it get?
Not too close, I think.
You think?
The calculations and simulation I've run, they say so.
Hope they're right, Ayan Ali said softly.
They continued on the calculated trajectory as the ship sang with the torque. The helix gave them a side acceleration of about a tenth of a grav, so Red Wing kept pacing the deck on a slight slant, inspecting the screens in the operating bays. He also watched how everyone was holding up. His crew had been refined, so they fit together like carefully crafted puzzles, each skill set reinforcing in others. That meant excluding even personal habits, like mineralarians, a faction who insisted that eating animals or even plants, which both cling to life, was a moral failing. Instead, they choked down an awful mix of sugars, amino and fatty acids, minerals and vitamins, all made from rocks, air, and water. That could never work while pioneering a planet, so the mineralarians got cut from the candidate list immediately, some for genetic fashions. Homo evolutus were automatically excluded from the expedition as too untested, though of course no one ever said so in public. That would be speciesism, a sin when Sunseeker was being built, and in Red Wing's opinion, one of the ugliest words ever devised. But with all the years of screening, there were still wild cards in his deck. Smart people always had a trick or two you never saw until pressure brought it out. Managing people was not remotely like ordering from a menu. As he watched an internal status board Fred was manning, Red Wing felt a hard jar run down the axis. Ayan Ali quickly corrected for a slew to their port side. The fusion chamber's low rumble rose. It sounded, Red Wing thought, a lot like the lower notes on an organ playing in a cathedral.
"Exhaust flow is pulsing," she said. "External pressure is rising behind us."
Funny. Red Wing watched the screens intently. Makes no sense.
We're getting back pressure.
Her hands flew over the command board. A long, wrenching wave ran through the ship. Red Wing sat at last in a deck chair, just in time, as a rumbling sound built in the walls and surges of acceleration shook the ship. The aft picture worsened. They saw from two angles looking aft that the plume was bunching up, as if rippling around some unseen obstacle. The logjam thickened as they watched. Rolling waves came through the deck, all the way from hundreds of meters down the long stack.
"Getting a lot of strange jitter," Beth said. She was in uniform, crisply turned out.
Red Wing looked around.
"It's your sleep time."
"Who could sleep through this? Captain, it's building up."
"You're to take the chief's pilot's chair in 3 hours."
"Aft ram pressure is inverting profile," Ayan Ali said crisply. "Never happens this, not even in simulations." "I can feel it," Beth said. "This much vibration, the whole config must be..." "Too much plasma jamming back into the throat."
Ayan Ali gestured to the screen profiling the engine, its blue magnetic hourglass-shaped throat. Its pinch-and-release flaring geometry was made of fields, so could adjust at the speed of light to the furious ion pressures that rushed down it, fresh from their fusion burn. But it could only take so much variation before snarling, choking, and blowing a hole in the entire field geometry. That would direct hot plasma on the ship wall itself, a cutting blowtorch. As they watched, the orange flow in its blue field line cage curled and snarled.
"It's under pressures from outside the ship," Ayan Ali said, voice tight and high.
"If it gets close to critical pressure, shut down," Red Wing said.
He was surprised his own voice sounded calm.
Beth said, "But we'll go to reserve power if we have to," Claire said.
"That won't last long," Carl said, "and this external pressure on our mag scoop could crumple it."
A long, low note rang through the ship, a full system warning. No one had heard that sound since training. The drive had not been off since they left Earthside.
"I'm going to spin us," Ayan Ali said. "Outrace the pressure."
She ran the helm hard over, and the mag scoop responded, canting its mouth. Next, she flared the magnetic nozzle at the very aft end of the ship, clearing it of knotted plasma. That took 2 seconds. Then she flexed the field back down and ran the fusion chamber to its max.
Redwing could follow this, but her speed and agility were what made her a standout. They were all hanging on as the entire ship spun about its radial axis. Redwing closed his eyes and let the swirl go away from him, listening to the ship. The pops and groans recalled the drastic maneuvers they'd run Sunseeker through during the years-long Oort cloud trials. He trusted his eyes more than the screen displays of magnetic stresses. The rumbles ebbed away. When the spin slowed, he opened his eyes again. The screen showed milder conditions around the ship.
"I broke us out of that magnetic pinch," Ayana Lee said. "We got caught in a sausage instability, had to flex our scoop pretty hard."
Redwing recalled that meant the radial squeezing the jet sometimes displayed. Carl had said the jet narrowing looked like some sort of sausage mode, which took it through the knothole and made it flare out once it was well beyond. But they weren't that close to the knothole. That was the point. The kink instability took a while to develop while the jet was arrowing in toward the bowl. Redwing thought it strange that the pinch effect had been so strong. He asked Carl if the magnetic pressures on their magnetic nozzles could be so strong, but before Carl could answer, he felt a prickly sensation play fretfully across his skin. Everyone looked around, sensing it also. Abruptly, a yellow arc cut through the air above the deck. It crackled and snaked as it moved, but turned aside whenever it met a metal barrier. They all bailed out of their couches. Redwing lay flat on the deck as the snapping, curling discharge twisted in the air above him. The crackling thing snarled around itself. Sparks hissed into the air. Yellow coils flexed, spitting light. The discharge arched and twisted and abruptly split, shaped into an extended cup shape that spun.
"It's shaping the bowl," Beth said.
The yellow arc made a bad cartoon, snapping and writhing, never holding true for long. Redwing felt his heart thump.
"Something is out there, making trouble for us,"
Beth said.
"Something we can't see."
Redwing recalled that in their discussions he had asked, "What could I be missing?" Well, here it was. Beth had once said that flying into the jet could give them an edge, all right, but they were huge unknowns. Unknown unknowns were like a double-edged sword, she had said, with no handle. You didn't know which way the edge would cut.